Hello, I'm Josh Widdicombe.
And I'm Rob Beckett.
Welcome to Lockdown Parenting Hell, the show in which Rob and I discuss what it's like to be a parent during lockdown, which I would say can be a little tricky. So, in an effort to make some kind of sense of the current situation...
and to make me feel better about my increasingly terrible parenting skills...
each episode we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how well they're coping.
Or hopefully not.
And we will be hearing from you, the listener, with your tales of lockdown parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, none of us know what we're doing. Hello, and you are listening to Lockdown Parenting Hell with...
can you say Josh
Widdicombe? Oh, my word. I've just played two. Do you want me to play again, Rob?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Didn't work on my laptop, so I went to play it on my phone. They both started playing at the same time.
This is... right. Hello, and you are listening to...
no, I think we should keep it in.
Okay, let's keep them, but let's at least try to start it properly, okay? So this is sort of letting people into the process. Hello, and you are listening to Lockdown Parenting Hell with...
can you say Josh Widdicombe? Josh? Can you say Rob Beckett?
Oh, very efficient, that. More efficient than your use of your phone.
Yes, exactly. That was Finn. And just to complete it...
hello, can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
And Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe. Yeah.
That is a nuke. So there we go. They are off two different devices, neither of which I could make work, and then they both worked at the same time.
Yeah. You hate this feature. It's because you have to deal with the emails.
The problem is, because for some reason I can't... I'm not going to go into it.
We're on, though. We're here, Josh. How's your week been?
You're not going to believe this, Rob.
Yeah.
We've just got a text from Michael saying he's lost us and he's trying to reconnect. What is going on? I'll tell you something, Rob. You know, so still clearing out the house.
Yeah.
So it's going well, actually. We've almost got there now.
What are you trying to get rid of? What why have you got loads of stuff?
Because we moved my daughter upstairs. Yes. So
to make space for the nursery for the new baby.
Yes,
basically.
The nursery is full of stuff, so we cleared that out this weekend. Lots of putting items in the street.
And now, Rob, you need stuff for a baby and the stuff for the older kid. So it's double stuff.
Built the cot this weekend. Don't need that to do that for 8 months. That was a
absolute madness. That is the best bit of advice. Don't build the cot until your baby's about 6 months old. I built a cot before my baby was born, and then I moved house before the baby was born.
Oh.
So we had to take the cot down, put it back up again, and it just stayed up for 6 months.
Oh, my word. That is a heartbreaker.
But what will happen is your partner will say, but please, I want the nursery to look nice. So you do it anyway, even though you know it's a fucking waste of time. Yeah. So that was a bit, I felt that. Did you feel
good
that?
Good to get it done. Yeah. In 8 months, I'll be delighted. However, built the cot. That was fine. But put some stuff outside.
You love that.
It's the best way to get rid of stuff because the charity shops are closed, isn't it?
Yes.
The Christmas tree holders finally gone.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Couple of jigsaws gone. No. Done them before, don't need to keep them.
Fair enough, I think that's good. Good recycling.
Yeah. Neck pillow for aeroplane flights.
Stiff neck.
Not gone.
Not gone. A pillow won't go, it's too intimate.
Pillow's never going to go, right?
Is it soft plush or is it inflatable?
It's soft plush. And we've got far too many of them because what happens is obviously... You go to the airport, you never think to take it, you buy another one. It's like American plug sockets.
And then you come home, put them in your big drawer, they stay in your drawer forever, and you get to the airport and buy a new one.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Dixon's or whatever it is, Curry's in an airport is fucking cleaning me out on them. Anyway.
That's the only thing that keeps them going. No one wants to go to Curry's or Dixon's, but they know you're forgetful.
Anyway, everything goes... do you want to know how bad I feel about this, Rob? Terrible. Do you know what I found on the floor?
What?
A single solitary piece of jigsaw.
Oh, no. What, it been dropped in your house or like by where you put it?
We'd opened it up, I think, to look inside, I think, before it went out or something. It's been tampered with by a child.
So you're giving away free puzzles with pieces missing, you sick fuck.
Awful.
You're horrible. That's horrible thing. That poor bastard. If anyone knows, what is the puzzle? Let's track it down and apologise to...
it was a puzzle which of the local area.
Oh, dear Josh.
Yeah.
That's
so tough. Grim times. Grim times. Not bad about it. Rob.
Yes.
Could you take me through what you've eaten this week? I've got a little game for you.
Oh, what I've eaten?
Well, wait a second, yeah. Because the new menu has been released for my daughter's nursery.
Oh.
And I thought we could play, is she going to eat better than Rob Beckett did?
Well, I think she will, because this week, well, it's a combination. I
what did you have for breakfast this morning, Rob?
I haven't had breakfast. I'm doing intermittent fasting. I'm avoiding breakfast.
Oh, Rob.
And what I'm doing is, because I
forgot that you were getting ripped for 40.
I'm getting ripped, mate. And I'm doing keto, which basically means that I don't eat any carbs, but I will at like midnight eat pork scratchings and a can of Coke Zero, which I can't imagine is a good diet, and that's why I've not lost any weight this week.
Oh, okay.
But I have been doing curries in my Thermomix, which I'm not getting paid to say this, is the future of cooking.
Is that a heated blender?
It's basically, yeah, but it's so expensive, but I think it's worth it because I've saved so much money not getting takeaways anymore. But anyway, I've been doing curries in that, and I've been making mental curries, mate. I've been doing my own... I've made my own...
Do you blend a curry? Well, what about the bits of curry?
Basically, it's...
What are you, an RAP?
No, it's not blended. But this Thermomix thing's mental. It's like every kitchen appliance in one bowl, and it cooks stuff, chops stuff, blends stuff, but all sorts, right? I can do sous vide, mate. I don't even know what it is yet, and I haven't done it, but I can do it. Anyway, I've got this because we weren't cooking in the house. We've got a terrible culture of not cooking in our house. I don't know, culture. Like, it's a
football
team falling apart. But I used to spend so much money on takeaways, and I'd always go, it's because I'm out and about, busy, blah, blah, blah. But we were both crap at cooking. And this thing, it's got an iPad on it, and it tells you exactly how to cook it. And it's got a weigh-in machine in it, Josh. That is turned into QVC. But anyway, I've been making my own curry powder.
What?
I made my own curry powder.
What are you doing, Rob?
I toasted a cinnamon stick.
You toasted a cinnamon stick in your Thermomix?
Yeah, not on its own, but with all other stuff. And now I've got a pot of my own curry powder that I use for my curries. And I made a Sri Lankan beef curry. And can I tell you the mistake Lou made?
Yeah.
Neither of us are very good at shopping and getting all the stuff in.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, she ordered beef. Like, you need, you know, like, for a curry, you have sort of, like, braising beef, whatever it is, right? Anyway, she didn't realise and thought, oh, it's a bit pricey, the shop this week. She'd ordered 500 grams of fillet steak. We had fillet steak curry by accident. Right? It worked out about 20 quid a portion. Yeah. But, mate, it's so bad, though, because I can't go back. Well, I can, because it's too expensive, but it was so nice.
You can afford it.
No, but I can't live like... I can't have fillet steak homemade curries.
What have you become?
Anyway, so we ordered the braising steak this week on the shop. And Lou don't really eat meat that much. But because we're doing keto, she has to eat more meat because that's like mainly part of it. And she's just like, I don't like it. I was like, yeah, but you can't have a fucking Wagyu curry every night in a fucking Thermomix at a pair of bellends. Anyway, I've been having... So, unless your daughter's having Wagyu steak curry for lunch, this week's been a bit... It's very hit or miss, basically, this week. It's either Paul Scratchings and Coke Zero or Wagyu steak.
Oh, well.
But it wasn't Wagyu. Let's go through your daughters.
Choose a meal, Rob.
Lunch on Tuesday.
Spelt risotto with butternut squash.
R-I-S. I think it's O-T-T-O.
You what?
Very nice. Too much? Not enough?
No, I enjoyed that. Yeah, spelt risotto.
What is spelt risotto?
It's a grain, isn't it, spelt? With butternut squash, fresh tomatoes, green salad, and seasonal fresh fruit.
Wow, that's a spelt risotto. What does she have for breakfast? Is it just like porridge and stuff? Do they do breakfast there?
Through the five breakfasts. Toasted oats with raisins, warmed berries, and Greek yogurt.
Toasted oat. What is that?
It's porridge. no, because it's with Greek yogurt. So it's like a...
Toasted an oat. Oh, my God.
It's granola, basically, that. Yeah. That's what that is. Eggy wholemeal bread with seasonal fruit.
Nice.
Banana oat pancakes.
I love the way that is so East London, that's put wholemeal bread in because eggy bread sounded too oily.
Scrambled eggs, homemade beans.
Homemade beans? Fuck off. Heinz know what they're doing. Anyway, sorry, Josh. So what else has she had? What was the most bougie thing on that menu, would you say?
Well, I'd
say... Because actually, it sounds like quite normal stuff, but they just give it a bit of a flair,
well,
don't they?
Yeah.
It's good PR.
I think the smoked haddock kedgeree on Monday is quite a...
That's a smelly dish for a load of kids, isn't it?
Oh, she's so fussy at home.
Does she eat it there?
Yeah, so she's, you know, at home, she's, you know, fussy over the... the shape of the pasta. And you're like, you're having spelt risotto and you're not kicking up a fuss.
It's because my daughter's like that. She has school lunches and she eats loads more different stuff there than she does at home, massively. It's ridiculous. And also, she was dairy-free for a few years, but we did the milk ladder and got her back onto dairy.
Yeah.
And we told the school, but they just sort of didn't realise. So she's been having, like, shit little cakes for ages. Oh. And then she went, can I not have the proper cakes? She was like, yeah, we did tell them, but she's on proper cakes now.
Oh, that's good.
Rather than the dairy-free ones.
Do you know when I was at school? So I went to a tiny school, my primary school. There's four children in my year.
Yeah, the school was normal size, just not many people.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Model village in Dorset.
Yeah, Devon. Right.
Whatever, same thing, isn't it?
Come on, mate.
It's just tourism, isn't it? It's tourism running the place, but hated by the locals.
Farmers as well, Rob. The farmers used to get, at secondary school, the week of Devon County Show, they'd get a week off. Like it was a religious holiday.
Really?
They just get the week off.
So would there be kids... So how was...
They were just kids. They were just not like... Where's like a quarter of the class? Devon County Show, isn't it?
Oh, you went Devon then as well when you said that? So would that be the children... So would there be the dynamic would be there'll be children of farmers and then they were basically... groom's a bad word. They're being conditioned to take over the farm.
Yeah, yeah. But they get the week off like it was Ramadan. Do you know what it was? You're like, this is not a religious holiday.
It's Devon's answer to Ramadan. I've got some great Instagram stuff here. They're a bit disgusting, okay? But just be warned, if you're eating food now, stop. Here we go. So after listening to the Michael Sheen episode and you talking about flying with children, I thought you might like to hear the literal shit show we had at 20,000 feet. We were flying to California to see my in-laws with our 19-month-old son, and I knew it was going to be hideous doing an 11-hour flight with a rampaging toddler. 19 months is a tough age because it's sort of a bit too young for iPads, but old enough to run around and be bored and probably not napping, maybe not napping. Anyway... They had an iPad and loads of charity shop plastic tat and a million snacks. I thought we might just make it there without too many mishaps. Just after dinner was served, we realised our son had done a poo. So I told my husband I'd go and change him. While I was in the queue, I looked down at my foot and there was something on my white Converse. And I suddenly realised, to my horror, it was a big lump of poo that somehow escaped from his nappy.
Oh, no.
I then looked down the aisle...
Oh, no.
And there were lumps of poo
all
the way down the walkway of the aeroplane.
Oh,
I threw my child at the person in front of me in the queue and started trying to pick up poo.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
With the baby wipes. I got halfway back to our seats and they turned all the lights off because it was sleepy time.
Oh, my God.
So I was scrambling around in the dark trying to find my son's poo.
Oh.
I thought I cleared it all up and told the air hostess who couldn't have really cared less. I honestly think our experience of long-haul flying is one of the worst, but please tell me others have had equally awful flights.
Why do people have kids?
This is interesting for me because I don't know if I mentioned this. I might be next August or next year sometime. We're trying to work it out. I might be going to Australia to do a tour, do like a few shows in all the cities in Australia.
How long would you be going for?
Well, normally you can do it in about 10 days if you go on your own because you get there, have a couple of days to recover, then jump between all the cities and then fly back. But we thought maybe for the summer holidays we could go as a family and have a holiday out there. And it sort of be a bit of a, you know, busman's holiday.
Yeah.
But that the kids would be 4 and 6. That would involve a 24-hour flight. So I just...
Ouch.
We just need stories of tips for that flight and more horror stories. Can you beat Louise
here? For the sake of this podcast, you do need to do that, Rob.
That flight. Yeah, I think I should. I think 6 and 4 might be okay. It's not a baby, it's not a toddler.
Would you enjoy your holiday if you knew you had these gigs in the evening?
Yeah, but we'd break it up a little bit and I'm trying to take a more zen approach to gigging, trying to be less pressure on myself. But I think if we broke it upward, I think if we went to a city and spent 3 days there and then I did a show in the evening, I'd be quite happy of the break type of thing. And we've got loads of family and friends out there, so it would be like, it's not just holiday. It's like we'd be based in a city seeing friends and family in an apartment rather than...
Yeah.
If I look, because I'd have to go anyway, so at least I can see the kids then. And it'll be a fun thing to do in summer, but it would be winter. But any terrible stories that beat poo aisle at the moment? Poo aisle's winning. I think we need a let's do this. Let's do a scoreboard, and poo aisle is winning the worst flying children's story.
Worst flying.
Can you
mishaps.
Beat poo aisle? Now, this isn't a flying story, but it is just as disgusting, if not worse. Hello, Rob and Josh. So the last one was from Louise, and this one's from Katie, Gaz and Lily in Crewe. Here's a little tip for any aspiring comedians. If you're gigging in North Wales, stay at Crewe Hall Hotel because it gets to North Wales in an hour and a half, 2 hours, and you can get the train to London really quick from Crewe Station. That is a great tip if you're touring the north of Wales. Anyway, hi, Rob and Josh. I have been listening to your podcast since the start. We had our first child on day 3 of lockdown in March 2020, so it's been the perfect night feed listen for me. I have a wonderful parenting story for you, which I really hope makes it to your podcast. I'd be over the moon. I should say here, I've been arguing with Lou in the night because I don't hear the children waking up at all. And she's becoming furious with me. And then she woke me up on purpose and I went to the toilet and she had a go at me for being too loud going to the toilet. And I said, I wouldn't be awake unless you wake me up. And she went, I was only awake because your kids woke me up. And it was 4 a.m. and I thought, you know what? I can't wait for Monday morning. Anyway, let's get back to the email. So last weekend, our daughter, now 11 months, woke up my husband at 5 a.m. in a truly unique way. I've been up a few times in the night with her, so she was lying between us, feeding for quite a while as I was enjoying the extra bit of shut-eye. In hindsight, probably feeding a bit too long. I sat her up and eventually, in one swift moment, she leant forward and projectile vomited in my husband's mouth.
Oh my word. Oh, I don't like this.
He was snoozing with his mouth open slightly. Wow. The look of shock and disbelief on his face was priceless.
Oh my
word. She was
word.
Also very shocked and let out a loud shriek. It was, without doubt, the weirdest wake-up call we've encountered so far. Interested to see if you've had been woken up in a really weird or gross way by your kids.
Oh my God.
Thanks again for the brilliant podcast. Keep them coming.
Let's start a leaderboard of that as well.
Okay, so we've got the worst stories on a flight and the weirdest, most shocking ways your children have woke you up. I find the creepiest is when they just stare at you. Sometimes they'll just stand there and then you wake up and you shit yourself. It's like a little Victorian ghost, especially because I wear 90s. And only old ghosts and nans wear 90s, don't they? I've never really seen one on a small person. And it's just shocking for me, like in the middle of the night, the silhouette of a 90 floating through your bedroom. It's horrible.
Now, Rob, should I quickly open a present?
Yes! She still hasn't sent them.
Still hasn't sent them. Rose's presents from 2018 Christmas that we found. This is for Chris, who is her cousin.
Cousin.
Well, so far we've had the reusable coffee cup and the mini karaoke microphone.
Yeah.
This is... What is this? It's a reusable bottle.
I'm starting to see why Rose didn't want to send them.
I'm not going to lie to you, Rob.
Worst present so far?
Well, the thing is, I think a reusable bottle is useful. Like, the taking the cold water out of your house bottle. I've got one of them. The problem is, when you see someone's range of presents next to each other, you see when they're on a theme, whereas normally you wouldn't see that.
It feels like she's gone mental in Tiger.
It does feel like she's gone mental in Tiger. Let's not rule that out. Right. Time for today's interview. I say it every time. I'm going to say it. It's my favourite. This is Nadia Hussein. Hello, Nadia Hussein. How are you?
I'm good. Hi. Yeah, I'm tired of babysitting my mum's grandkids. Yeah. Could you have them back now, please?
I'd say that is the ultimate opening line we've had. How many kids have you got, Nadia? And how old are they?
So I've got two boys, teenagers, 14 and 13. At the time, when I had them, when they were young, one after the other, it felt like a good idea. I'm regretting that choice now because now I have two teenagers, which is a lot of hormones, a lot of acne and a lot of food.
Sounds like a bake-off tent.
Yes, that was pretty much the bake-off tent. And then I've got my 10-year-old daughter who is basically reverted back to being a 2-year-old and she's attached to my ankles. So yeah, we're having a great time.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So normally they'd be at school, but you're homeschooling now, presumably.
Yeah. It's weird because the boys are fine. They're quite good because they're really busy. They've got lots of, the school's been really good at giving them work. And my little girl is kind of, she comes down and she's like, I have to do something creative. And I'm like, what does that mean? And that usually means she wants to bake a cake or paint something. And I'm like, why don't you go outside? and collect flowers. And it, that lasts for all of about 5 minutes.
So, yeah,
it doesn't
especially
work.
When it was snowing for about a week. That's a tough creative gig, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But what I did find was that when she said I need to do something creative and something for, she had a task and it's, they said, do something helpful. So I got her to sit down and unsubscribe to all my emails.
No way.
Nature gave me these little laborers. Why not? So I got her to sit down and she thought it was the best job in the world. She felt really kind of, she felt really grown up by it. But, you know, I subscribe to a lot of rubbish. And so she was unsubscribing and she just said, Mom, that's a lot of emails. I was like, yep, you just get, she's done the lot, done the lot.
Amazing. That's genuinely the best task I've heard anyone.
She kind of culled the lot. It's good to get a kid to do it because she started asking and then I kept saying, oh, no, maybe keep that one. And she said, no, I'm not asking you anymore. She just, it's really good because she kind of just, she took hold of the situation and she dealt with it like a true 10-year-old. And she just said, back off, I'll do this. And she did it. And like, honestly, it's the best thing I've done this year is get her to do that.
Wow, she's like, what's the decluttering woman called?
Mary Kondo.
Yeah.
She's like that.
Her name. You know that's my daughter's name. It's Mary.
Oh, wow. There we go.
And are the boys as helpful or are they a bit more grunty and on their own in the on the computers and stuff?
I mean, they're really good at asking me if I need help. It's when I say yes that the truth comes out because it's like often they always ask me. Honestly, they're really good at asking me, do you need help? And it's the second I say yes, I do. They're like, oh. And sometimes it's just easier to do it myself. And I think with the kids, boys being at home, like we've had to establish boundaries that we haven't had to normally. And actually it's my poor husband that suffered the most because he works from home. He works in IT. Boring. We don't need to talk about that. So he works in IT and his, you know.
I want to hear more about your husband's job, Nadia.
No, please don't. Please don't. You know what I do? When I can't sleep, I ask him to talk about work. And so honestly, it works. It's like a lullaby to me. So because he talks about it and it's so dull and so many letters and it's so boring and he just talks and I fall asleep. It is magical. Honestly, we should do a podcast on IT and get people to fall asleep. It's
that
great.
That is a good shout. I mean, to be fair though, I am genuinely interested. How big can the cloud get and where is it? How can it just hang there? There's got to be a machine somewhere taking it, hasn't it?
Yeah. Surely. So many letters. What does it all mean? But the poor man, he works from home. And so usually it's my husband and the cat that are at home. And ever since lockdown, now we've kind of taken over the space and I'm at home so much more and the kids are all at home. And so you could see the look on my husband's face. He's like, seriously, get lost. Why are you all here for? So, cause he had his, like he had run of the, you know, he could come in, make a coffee. He didn't have to stop to see how I'm feeling. He didn't have to stop to make any small talk with me. He could just get in. My husband's not a talker. He gets in, makes his coffee, gets out. But when I'm stood in the kitchen and I'm like, oh, I'm having a bad day. He's like, oh man, I've got to talk to her now. But then there's the kids. So I think he suffered more than anyone else having us at home. But the boys spend so much time upstairs. It's really hard because I'm like, let's play Rummy Cub. And they're like, please not Rummy Cub.
And what do they play instead then? Are they on computers or are they on their phones?
Well, we don't allow phones during the week. So and there was a point where we're like, oh, you've got to talk to your friends. And, you know, you've got to keep socializing. But they were just on the phones all the time. So yeah, Monday to Friday, we've culled them and said, no, you can't have them Monday to Friday because they talk to all their friends on their chats while they're at school. So I said, not Monday to Friday. And then on a weekend, we might let them have their phones occasionally, but it's like you give them an inch and they take a mile and genuinely they're getting humps like camels. What's going on? Because they're looking down all the time. So I was like, guys, can you look up? Like, I feel like I haven't seen their faces because they're always kind of looking down either laptop or phone. So like, I feel really guilty, but equally I'm still the parent. So I'm like, no, you can't have them. I'm enjoying parenting a little bit more now than this last year and a half than I have ever, because I don't actually care how they, like I care how they, like before, I suppose because I was away a lot more, I used to feel really guilty And so I'd give in a little bit more.
Yeah.
And now because I'm at home, I'm like, well, let's just make each other's lives hell together.
So do you worry that what it's going to be like when you go back to, because presumably you're going to, everything's going to open up soon. And so you're going to be away again. Yeah. Do you think you'll look back on this as a kind of a real period of bonding with your children?
Yeah, we've definitely, I think in all seriousness, I think sometimes we, like, it's tough. It's not easy just being stuck in this. And I say stuck, we're not stuck, we're safe. You know, we're safe at home. Yeah. And to, you know, like, we love each other, but everybody needs space. Everybody needs a little bit of time away from each other. And there are moments where we've had really hairy moments. It's like, this is getting really difficult. But that being said, equally, you know, we're never going to get this experience ever again. I feel sorry for my teenagers because this is the time where they should be going to the cinema and meeting with their friends. And they've lost all of that. But, you know, we're never going to get this time back. And we've been able to spend time together that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So, like, one thing I realized was that sometimes I've been so busy, I've not looked in their eyes. And so sometimes I just hold it. Like, I genuinely, if you think about how busy we can get sometimes, how often do we just hold their faces and just look at their eyes? Just, you know, like, and that's what I do. I hold
to
their...
To a 14-year-old?
Yeah, he hates it, but I love it. Yeah.
And Nadia, you've got, like, the thing I remember most about, like, the first time you rose to fame is you've got the most kind of, your eyes really, like, look at people. Do you know what I mean? Your eyes really stand out. So the idea of you holding your 14-year-old's face and just staring into their eyes.
Yeah.
It's an arresting image, Nadia.
It is, but I also threaten him with taking him out of the inheritance if he doesn't look back. It's like, I will cut you out the inheritance. Look me in the eyes. And that usually works. Yeah.
It must be like, of all the people we've spoken to, in your children's life, your life has changed so dramatically in what you were doing before. I don't know how old your children would have been when you did Bake Off. What was it, 6 or 7 years ago now?
Yeah, like my eldest was 8, so really little.
And has that affect, like, how have they adapted to that? A lot of people who we spoke to when they've had kids, like, their job and has been the same throughout, but did it change how you parented and stuff like that?
Of course. I mean, our challenges became different. You know, going out, whether it's restaurants or just down the street, you know, when people recognize you, it's not as easy anymore, because I think as they've gotten older, where it felt like fun at the beginning, my eldest has become quite protective. And he's, you know, he's bigger than I am, you know, he's bigger than me. If he doesn't like what I'm saying, you know, he just grabs me around the waist, picks me up and takes me back in the kitchen. Like, he just picks me up.
Like an old 50s dad. Get back in there.
He never says it. He doesn't say anything. He holds me around the waist, picks me up off the ground, takes me in the kitchen, and walks out, shuts the door, and he's gone. And so it has changed. As they've become older, it's definitely changed. Like, my eldest had a task to talk about somebody that inspires them, somebody in the public eye that inspires them. And I said, so you're going to be writing about me? He goes, don't be ridiculous. So he couldn't, like, so for them, they couldn't care less. Like, the boys do not care what I do. They don't want to be a part of it. They're not interested at all. The idea that I do this, it makes no difference to them. But I remember really early on when they were having this in school, when we'd just moved them, because we used to live in Leeds, and we'd moved them to their new school. And the teacher asked him, what do your parents do? It was a question they were asking all the kids. And he didn't know what to say. And I remember we always have this conversation. It's really funny because, like, so much has changed in the last 6 years. And he was like, and he said, Miss, can you come back to me? So he couldn't work out what I do, because, like, I don't have holidays. It's just, it's a bit, it's freelance, isn't it?
So
for him, he was like, I don't really know what she does. So he couldn't put a name to it.
Yeah.
And then he just said, she follows her dreams.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, man. Like,
oh, wow.
Sold out on a pillow, man. Sold out on a pillow. Like, genuinely, when he said that, I was like, and that sticks with me, that stays with me forever. And ultimately, as parents, you know, what we do doesn't really matter, as long as they believe that we're following our dreams in the hope that they'll follow theirs. And that's ultimately what I've always ever wanted. So the fact that I do this job means nothing to the boys. But my little girl, can I say, she loves every second of it. Every second. When we would go out to town and people didn't recognize me, so we'd be walking past, and if people don't look at me or recognize, she watches to see who looks, who twitches, who might turn back around. So she's out there watching, looking. She loves all of that. And when one day we were walking past, nobody recognized me. I was like, great day, we can get on and get stuff done. And she, in the middle of the town center, turns around, walks up ahead of me about 10 yards, stands in front of me, turns around, hands on her mouth, and says, "Oh my gosh, is that Nadia from the Bake Off?" And what happens? Everybody turns around.
Oh, it's funny.
Then I'm stuck in town for an hour, signing things, taking selfies. And I was like, whilst I don't mind any of that, I try to stay away from it when I'm with my kids.
Yeah.
And she just stood there.
And I bet the Bake Off crowd take ages to take a selfie. I mean, the age demographic, they've got leather cases on their phone, they've got their thumb over the camera, they're a bit doddery, some of them. It must be enough.
Bad angles, bad angles, yep.
That's just Mary Berry, never mind everyone else. I was going to say, obviously, like, you know, because you moved, did you move to Milton Keynes, was it Milton Keynes area? To be closer to London and, you know, so you could get more work and stuff like that. And so how has your parenting, like the split of the parenting between you and your husband changed? You know, because I think obviously you had more time to be with the kids and stuff before Bake Off. So how's the split now? Is it sort of 50-50 or because you're both working full time? How do you split the parenting?
In all honesty, I moved down south for free babysitting. I
didn't. Okay.
Yeah, it was mostly free babysitting because like mum's like 25 miles from me. It's a good distance between me and my mum, but also equally very easy to get the kids to her. So it kind of works out. It's changed dramatically. I was a stay-at-home mum. I was studying. I was going to university at the same time. So I was between looking after the kids and studying. It was all very kind of full on, but you know, I still maintained to, you know, I was very lucky to be able to be at home with my kids because I think that's a luxury. You know, I think it is a luxury to be able to not need to work and stay at home with the kids and raise the children. And, you know, I had the best years, you know, the really cute years. Unfortunately, my husband has he's had the raw end of the bargain because he's now got teenagers. So it's like I had the baby cutesy stuff and nap times and, you know, cute pictures. And I had all of that. But yeah, it's definitely, we don't do a whole 50-50 thing. Like I'm a firm believer in when you're a parent raising children, there's always somebody who's putting in a little bit more than someone else. And there was a time in my life where it was definitely more like 90-10, you know, and my husband was working away a lot, you know, traveling a lot. And for me, you know, I was at home all the time. So I had all of that. So in terms of parenting, we don't do 50-50, like somebody's always putting in a little bit more. And, you know, whilst we've been at home, you know, I definitely do more than he does because he always says, "You're so good at laundry." I'm like, that's not, what is that? Is that I think he thinks it's foreplay. I don't know. What is that? Like, not working.
Yeah, like you go, "Oh, thank you so much. I'll do more now. I'm so good at it."
It's like, yeah, no. But, you know, when I'm away before all of this, like when I used to be away for like something like, I could be away for like 20, 21 days. He has the kids and he's really good. Like he's really good. And he says he's a better parent when I'm not around. I don't know what that means, but I think it means that we egg each other on. Sometimes it's nice to have them to yourself. And I think he loves that. So he's had an opportunity to be with the kids in a way that he hasn't had before. So I think he really enjoys it. And also like we've become really good at just getting the kids to do stuff. So like we don't do the laundry. They dust the house. They spend 3 hours on a Sunday dusting. So it's hilarious.
3 hours? Where do you live?
No, it's not that big.
It's an antique shop. How much dust is there for three kids, 3 hours? That's 9 hours of dusting, Nadia.
I know, but that's 3 hours of free time.
Yeah, fair enough. And will they get pocket money for that, or is that just
no?
Sort of
they don't.
Expected?
No, no, they don't. They don't get any pocket money for any of that. You know, they get money when they need it, but absolutely no way. It's like, I don't get paid to clean my house, so why should they? So, you know, I did toy with the idea of getting a cleaner, and my little girl said, "Oh no, that's too fancy." And then the boys looked at her as if, "Are you kidding? Like, we could cut out of cleaning." She goes, "Mom, that's too fancy. We can't have a cleaner. We'll just do it ourselves." I was like, "She's the good kid. I like her. She's a good kid." Yeah, the boys were like, "What is wrong with you? She nearly got us a cleaner." But yeah, they do it. They clean for 3 hours every single day. And it's not like, it sounds like, I laugh about it and it sounds like punishment. But actually, you know, we live in this home and I could get a cleaner if I wanted to. But, you know, we live in this home and they have to understand that they make this mess. We make this mess. And they've got to understand what it's like to kind of, to just be functional. And, you know, like, yeah, there's no, you know, there's no specific gender that should be doing a specific job in this house. I grew up in a very kind of men go out to work, women stay at home. That's kind of how I was raised in our family. And those gender roles don't exist anymore. Everybody chips in, everybody gets the work done. And I mean, I'm playing the long game here. Like, one day when they get married, I want their husbands and wives to say, "Wow, you raised a really good human." And like, I'm definitely playing the long game. I want somebody, I want them to get married and go off and for their husbands and wives to come to me and say, "Thank you, well done for raising such a good human." And that's really important to me because like, I'm grateful to my mother-in-law for raising a good man. And you know, and my husband occasionally might reciprocate that feeling, not always, but... Not always, but you know, that's the long game. But you know, I want them to be domesticated and know how to use an iron and a washing machine. Least of all to help me, because it's hard work. And
they're never going to be as good as you are at laundry, though, Nadia. You're just so good at laundry.
You're the best.
You're the best there is.
On marriage, though, as well, because you had an arranged marriage. Would you want that for your kids, or what do you think about that for them?
It's weird because we had this semi-weird arranged marriage where we spoke to each other for about 6 months. We never actually saw each other. We never met each other. We maybe had like exchange a couple of photos. And luckily, he photographs well, my husband. Yes, he photographs really, really well.
You didn't get catfished, did you?
No. There's
a picture online. He's a very handsome man. But as you say, he photographs well. He photographs as well as you do laundry, I'd say. He's right.
But yeah, no, we had this weird arranged marriage where we kind of spoke to each other for 6 months, exchanged a couple of photos. And the day we got engaged was the first time I'd ever seen him in person.
Oh, wow.
So like, talk about gamble, like, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's a hottie though. I've just Google imaged him.
Yeah, but nice.
He's a bit too attractive to do IT. Are you sure he's doing IT? He's not like a spy. That would be a nightmare, though, if you were a spy in secret and your wife won Bake Off. It really, really undermines all the spying you do.
Yeah. But he does always say, you know, "You work in telly and occasionally I make an appearance. Wouldn't it be awful if I was ugly?" And I was like, "Excuse me? Like, who said you weren't ugly? What's wrong with you?"
Oh, sorry, we've really ruined it. If he listens to this, it's not going to help me and Rob going on about how attractive he is.
No, like, so he's, I mean, like, he photographs really well, but, you know, when I saw him the first time, like, he must be good looking if I got engaged to him the first time I saw him. Big gamble, though, at 19, be 19, got married when I was 20. But, like, he's, you know, like, beautiful face, but great, also great thighs, really good thighs.
Good to know. It's only top half up in this hello photo I've got, so I don't know what the thigh situation is.
Just Google Nada Hussein husband thighs, Rob.
What, again? I did that last week.
I did post a happy birthday message and said, "Happy birthday, you have great thighs." So it is there somewhere on my Instagram. He has great thighs. But we got married when I was 20, and I definitely, I can tell you, we are one of the success stories. We're very lucky that we really get along and we have a similar sense of humor. We are different in that we are chalk and cheese. Like, he's quite emotionally inept and I am not. And so we're very different. We're very different, but we work. We work really well for our kids. Just, you know, when like, no, I don't want to do that to them because like, you know, when they're old enough to find husbands and wives and settle down, I want to be in a sports car traveling the world. I don't want to be... I don't want to be doing all of that.
Yeah, you don't want to be like recruitment. You want to be like headhunting. It's a nightmare, a recruitment consultant. And that's such a big recruitment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big responsibility. I'm like, I know my kids, but like, I don't want to know them so well that I'm picking husbands and wives for them. That's weird. It's just like, just do that yourself. And I think I can't imagine that I would get that right. You know, I can't imagine. I can't even stick to a shopping list. No, I can't. No. No, thanks.
Yeah. What about your parents? Obviously, they're an older generation, they pick that for you. But like, so do they sort of agree with you slightly, or do they sort of, would they try and convince you to go down the arranged route?
I stopped listening to them about 12 years ago.
Okay, so, fair enough.
Yeah. It's not 12 years. Yeah, it's been about 12 years since I stopped listening. But they, you know, it's really weird because I'm the only person in my family who had an arranged marriage. Within my brothers and sisters, I'm the only one that had an arranged marriage. And that's mostly because I couldn't be bothered with like looking for someone. I was like, that's so dull. It's just like, no, it's like, I just couldn't be bothered.
So it's like when I go with Amazon recommends rather than look down at all the different items on Amazon, I'm just like, I just need to get a chair.
Yeah, just a chair. Just give me a chair.
Also, as well, sometimes the arranged marriage, because it's sort of like in traditional sort of British culture, it's not really a thing that happens. But a lot of like people that live in small towns just go to the same pub every week and then end up marrying someone in that pub. So it's sort of like a fishing net of arranged marriage to a certain extent, because they're not really exploring the world to find their soulmate kind of thing.
I think I got really lucky in that we did it the other way around. We got married first, so we had that commitment. But we did all the things like anyone outside of a marriage would do. You know, we got to know each other really well and we kind of just realized what we like, what we don't like about each other. But we were tied to being married. And I said to my husband when we got married, I said, you know, this is it, right? I'm not getting divorced. You're stuck. And he was like, okay. So I kind of like laid it out. I was like, I'm not getting divorced. We're making this work. And he said, okay, yeah. And that's basically the tone of most of our marriage is tough. So that's kind of how we were very lucky, because I know lots of people who haven't had arranged marriages and it hasn't worked out. And I know people who have had arranged marriages and it's worked out. It's luck of the draw and it's, you know, hard work. And definitely don't want that for my kids, because I kind of want them to have the freedom to do whatever they want to do and find their own happiness and be able to make, because you have to make mistakes to learn. So they've got to go through that. Through their life. And plus, I want to be in a sports car driving around Europe, please. I don't want to be doing any of that.
Your book you've written, Today I'm Strong, which is a kid's picture book. It's coming out in a paperback. And it's weird now, because I imagine you wrote this book like for you, like kids, and they're much too old for it now to enjoy, your teenage boys. Mm. So do you feel a bit like, oh, like, I wish I wrote that a few years earlier and I could have read it to them when they were younger?
Yeah, I think... You know what? You say that, but my kids still have picture books that they read as children that they still enjoy now, because it's the message. It's the feeling you get after reading just a few hundred words that sticks with you. Like even now, because I wrote a previous book to this was My Monster and Me, which is about feeling anxious and feeling worried. And books like that didn't exist when my kids were really little. So yeah, of course, I'd love if those books were still around. I would love if those books were around when my kids were little, but they still take something from it. And they're not embarrassed by the fact that I write children's books. And sometimes it just takes a few short words or a couple of sentences for them to feel like, oh, you know, because Today I'm Strong is all about your inner tiger and finding that kind of strength in you. And every book of mine has got an animal attached to it, because I think kids naturally love relating to animals. And a tiger is such a big, fierce, bold animal. And we all have that tiger inside of us. And I think sometimes telling your children that tiger's in there, you've got to find that tiger though. Yeah. And that's really important. And even now we go refer back to the books and I'm like, you know, where's the tiger? Find your tiger. Yeah. And sometimes the tiger is a tiny little kitten, and other times it's big and it's fierce and it protects you. And you have to learn that about yourself. And I think my kids, even though they're older, they still really enjoy I think they feel really proud of the books, because, you know, they know that there are children in schools, in libraries who are enjoying the books. And that's, I think they, I think they like that.
Well, it's a beautiful message and it's beautifully illustrated. But also, I think you're a living embodiment of sort of embracing that sort of inner tiger, where the reality is, if you didn't like bite the bullet and push yourself to apply for that Bake Off, you probably would be living a very different life. It'd be a great life, but you wouldn't have, you know, realised your full potential, which you are now, which is, I think, when you read this book and knowing what you've gone on to achieve, you know, going from just studying, looking after kids, and all of a sudden you win the biggest show on telly and then you're making a cake for the Queen. It feels like someone's thought of a story. Yeah, no, but it's unbelievable. So, like, I think, you're a living embodiment of that, embracing that inner tiger, which is really inspiring.
I hope, you know, like, I think... so often, like, if you'd ask me, if we had this chat like 5-6 years ago, I would have said, oh no, let's just talk about cooking and baking, because that's kind of where I, after doing Bake Off, like the intention was never a career. You know, I didn't even apply for Bake Off. My husband applied because I was so anxious at the time. He just said, you've got to do this because you need to do something that doesn't involve me and the kids. I think he just did it for cake. I think he just did it for cake.
To be fair, you did get rejected from the Great British Laundry Off, which you first applied for.
I just wasn't good enough.
Did you put him forward for Britain's Next Top Model?
Do you know what, though? That's so incredible that he did that, where, like you say, at the time, you was probably doing most of the parenting, and a lot of men would go, oh, I've got a cushy gig here, I'll do a bit of work, but my wife's doing all that, you know. And but to push you, encourage you so that you did something for you is such a lovely thing to do.
He's not just a pretty face. But also slightly, when I say it out loud, the fact that I was suffering with anxiety, like I was at my worst in terms of my mental health. And he said, hey, let's just put you on the biggest baking show in the country. Like at the time, can you see why that didn't work for me? I was like, what? No. That's not going to work for me. And I said, no, that's ridiculous. And the fact that I got through every stage without even realizing it and then made it to the final 12. Then I got the call and they said, you've made it to the final 12. And I kind of freaked out, hung up. And then I called my husband, shouted at him, and I said, look what you've done. And he said, what have I done? I said, I've made it to the final 12. And when he came home that night, I said, you're going to have to call them and tell them that I died. And he said, no. No. He did. I did. I said, you got to call them. You call them and you tell them I'm dead. I died and they'll be really sad for you. Just tell them. And he said, no, you call them and tell them you died. And I said, well, that doesn't work, does it? No, he goes, you're just going to have to do it now. So he kind of pushed me, knowing very well that I was stronger than I led myself to believe. And it was tough doing Bake Off. It was tough doing all of that. And the fact that I get to do, you know, like the fact that I get to call it my career, sometimes it really, I can't even say the words. You say, like, I always stumble when it comes, I was like, oh, it's just, I keep saying, oh, yeah, you know, like my mom still says, are you done yet? And I'm like, Mom, I'm not on a jolly. It's an actual job. And she's like, no, are you done? Are you going to go home to your kids yet? And when she says that, like, it spurs me on to just keep going even more, because I get to, it's hard. Let's face it, growing up within the community I did, like, it's the simple thing of being more successful and earning more than men in my family is hard for people in within our community to take. So that is quite a difficult thing. And sometimes I try and shy away from that. And actually, rather than shying away from it, I should embrace that, because I love what I do. And if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I'd have said to you, do you know what? No, just can we just talk about the simple things like baking and that's it. I don't want to talk about anything else, and cooking and being in the kitchen, nothing else. But like 5 years on, I understand the responsibility. You know, I, as a young kid, did not grow up reading books that I could relate to, or watch television and watch someone that I could relate to.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and I often, as a teenager, ask myself, if I don't see myself, do I even exist? And now, you know, as somebody who works in publication, in television, as a Muslim, you know, first generation British child of an immigrant, Bengali brown woman, you know, so often I saw myself as one-dimensional, because I was only led to believe, I was raised to believe that I only had one role in my life. And now I know that's not true. There are dimensions to me, to us, that exist. We can be bold, we can be bright, we can be successful, we can earn money, we can be funny, we can be all of those things. And that's how I want to raise my kids. And that responsibility is so much bigger than just my children. It's it's bigger than that now, because now that I work in the public eye, there are people like me, girls, women, immigrants, brown, Muslims, whoever, you know, they look at me and say, you know what, if average Nadia can do it, so can I. And that's really important to me, that representation is so important.
I think it's so inspiring. I think one of the things also you talked about is your anxiety as well. And I think that's really important, because I think people presume, like, that's such an interesting story about your husband coming home and you didn't want to go on the Bake Off. Mm. And I think being honest about that, people would presume that you're writing your cookbooks, you're writing your children's books, you've written a novel, you've got TV shows, you've got everything. And I think it's really important. Like, I think that's so important as a message, that you still do struggle with anxiety and panic and stuff like that. And for people to know that those two things can exist together, that doesn't mean that their life is just trapped, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you don't have to exclusively be one or the other. You can have both. And I think so often I get asked, people like, oh, you're so happy and you're so, like, you seem like you've got it all together. And that's not true. You know, like, I, as somebody who suffers with mental health issues, I, you know, lying is a big part of that, you know, like pretending and painting on a smile is a big part of just getting through. And one of the best things I ever did was to be honest about my mental health, because you know what it's like when you put something like that out on in the public, in the public forum like that, you know, you get people who support you, but equally get the other side, which is, because, you know, social media is a cesspit of negativity. Let's face it. It can be great, but it can be so negative. And that whole kind of bandwagon mentality that kind of like, oh, you're just a celebrity who's just doing it to sell books. And that's not true at all. You know, like, I would not, like, I couldn't make this up. You couldn't make this up. You can't. When you have it, you know you have it. And it was a choice for me to be honest about it. Because one thing that was really important for me was to show vulnerability, not just to people, but also to my children. They needed to see that I can be vulnerable, because it's not healthy for me to show them that you have to be strong all the time.
Yeah, it's unrealistic, isn't it, for young people, young Muslim women watching you. And if you never show any vulnerability, they think, well, I can't do that. She's superwoman. But if they know that you do struggle and it's a constant progression of improvement in yourself and understanding your own mental health.
Yeah.
And I think that opens it up more, where sometimes you do just see these bulletproof people and you think that's impossible, that can't be attained. But I think if you're more human like you are, it's so refreshing. And I wanted to ask you, but with the anxiety, because I did the Bake Off special, celeb one, and it was one of the most intimidating sets I've ever been in. And I've, you know, done telly for years and live stand-up, I'm used to people looking at me. But as soon as you start baking, all the cameras come on you and it's like a bit overwhelming. And then especially, even when you're cooking in your own kitchen and you've got to flip over a sponge, it's a bit of a, oh God, is it going to work type moment.
Yeah.
But you literally hear 20 people go, right, he's flipping the sponge, go over to Rob, and 20 people and cameras are like a centimetre away from you.
Yeah.
And it's so overwhelming. And like, I was doing it with like Daisy Ridley, a Hollywood actress, and Alexander Burke from The X Factor, and everyone was getting panicky and stressed. And, you know, I didn't even really care how well it went. I was sort of there for the charity thing. But if you're into baking, you've got anxiety, how did you cope with that sort of pressure? I think I would have just flipped out if it was me 10 years ago.
I don't know about you, but I think, you know, when they employ the people on Bake Off, like, I think, do you think there's like a chart on how cruel a person can be and the cruelest people get the job? Because it's like, do you have no heart? Like, I'm trying to, like, you know, when they come and talk to you,
and try and put you off.
It's when they talk to you when you know that your timer's just gone off. You know, when your timer goes off and they come running. Yeah. So, yes. So, but you know that timer's gone off because you need to take that cake out of the oven. So, the 3 minutes you spend talking to the presenter or the judges, like, that's 3 minutes overbaked now. And so you then, and then they come to judgment and they say, they flick your cake around like they're flicking your heart in with a fork. and they say, slightly overbaked. And then you can't even talk back and say, yeah, but you know it's overbaked because you spoke to me for 3 minutes of time away.
they cut all that out, don't they?
They take all of that out. And then you're like, oh. So, you know, I used to try and hide it. Like, I used to say, like, I used to like turn the timer off before it was about to go off.
Oh,
and then count in my head and then quickly take it out. And they say, oh, you took it out. And I'm like, yeah, it's out now, tough. Yeah. I think by the end, I became better at kind of just like trying to avoid them. And I think when you're in a tent full of 12 people, you've almost got 12 people to hide behind. It was much harder near the end when there was just three of us and the tent was very sparse, very empty. And even the crew, you know, like, I don't know if there's like a hold for the crew where like you, 1 minute you've got like 50 people in the tent in terms of crew. And then suddenly there's like 15. You're like, where are the others gone? Is there like, is there a big yellow storage box you put them in? till the next series. And where have they all gone? But it gets, it's so much more anxiety inducing the smaller it gets. But I found myself really, because you can't have your phones on you and they're taken away in a box before you even start, so you don't see your phone till the end of the day, and so I used to, like, you can't even distract yourself with things online. And so I used to go to the toilet and sit there and have panic attacks I used to say I need to go for a wee, and then I would go and have a panic attack and then come back. But I think because I was so invested in these bakes, that baking has always been my happy place. And I think even with the cameras and the distractions, you know, when I really just forgot about all of that, I could just concentrate on my baking. And I think that got me, I think in some ways that got me through.
What would you say to someone who is listening to this, that's kind of having panic attacks, but isn't kind of talking to anyone about them? What would you say they would be the best thing for them to do?
I think this year has been really tough, hasn't it? And I think my kids are really struggling with their own mental health, and as are, you know, family members and people around me. And it's really tough to be there for anyone, because what you want to do is just go and hold someone, because sometimes that's kind of all they need, is just to be held. And it is, it's been a tough year, and I've kind of had to hold myself because I haven't got anybody else to hold. So for anyone who is struggling out there, one of the hardest things is talking about it and to physically allow those words to come out of your mouth. But once the words have come out of your mouth, when you say, I need help, I'm struggling, or I need you to be here for me, to be able to say that is one of the hardest things when you're suffering with anxiety. And once you've allowed those words to come out of your mouth, you've done, that's half the battle. I promise you, that is half the battle, being able to say it out loud. And it took me a long time to be able to allow myself to be vulnerable. So for anyone out there who has, even if it's, if you don't have lots of family around you, if it's your neighbor or a friend or somebody you can text, anybody, make contact, speak to somebody. That is the first step in helping yourself. That's what I would say to anyone who hasn't spoken out loud about how they're feeling.
Oh, I think that's great advice. And I think sometimes you'll be surprised that they may be feeling the same as well. And you can sometimes find a common ground with people that are also struggling.
I think men really struggle to open up and say, I'm not, you know, because I think there's this sense that men have to always, I think vulnerability and women seem to, people think that they naturally go hand in hand. And so when women say, I'm feeling shaky or I'm not feeling good, it almost feels like it's more acceptable than when a man says it. And I think men have this whole thing where they have to be strong all the time. I mean, I push my husband. I'm like, cry, just cry once. Please, give me anything. Just cry, be vulnerable. It's, you know, anything.
Have you tried grabbing his face and staring into his eyes?
Maybe if I tell him, like, it's really hot when men cry, maybe that'll make him.
Well, yeah.
Maybe that might work. But he doesn't. I'm like, please, anything. So I think being vulnerable is so important, and allowing people, because it allows you to allow people in. And I think it's really hard for men. I think men really struggle with that. So especially to men, I think, you know, if you've got somebody you're close to and that you can speak to comfortably, then you absolutely should. And also workplaces are becoming much better at having the facilities to help people who are struggling, especially right now. So, you know, find out if your workplace has got any sort of scheme where you could, you know, where they help with your mental health, because it is so much more available now than it was a few years ago. So, you know, research, dig deep.
There's a charity I work with, the Matt Palmer Trust. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, we lost, sadly, but he, so it's helping people with mental health problems. And the charity have started up these mental health first aid courses that if you go to the Matt Palmer Trust website, you can basically sign up and they teach you how to become like a mental health and safety person, so that if you're in an office environment, you can be aware of behaviours and stuff. Yeah. And it teaches you how to approach that person and how to offer support. So if you are, you know, listening and you were a part of a company, you can go to the Matt Palmer Trust website and sign up to one of their courses, and it sort of helps you be aware of and how to help people that are struggling, which I think is quite a good thing to have, because you know you have people in offices in HR that help with other things.
Yeah.
So I think it's good if people are trained in how to spot someone struggling and how to offer them support that they need.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, absolutely.
It's quite a delicate thing, but I think, yeah, it's so inspiring, Nadia. And so I have these conversations with Ramesh quite a lot. We, you know, as he's sort of a very famous Asian person in this country.
Yes, I love Ramesh.
Growing up,
we really wanted you to go. Never heard of him.
Yeah. But he was like saying when he was growing up, all that was on the telly was like Goodness Gracious Me, which is brilliant, and comedy, and then Sanjay and Geeta in EastEnders. Those are the only Asian people on the telly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you sort of have to forge your own path, really. And I think what both of you are doing is so incredible, and just it's really to be admired. And yeah. I think your kids, are, you know, even now they're 13 and 14 and pretend they don't care, but you know deep down they're walking around with pride knowing you're writing these books and doing what you're doing. So
it's such an amazing story.
There's this thing that we say, like my kids... Growing up now as second generation Brits, it's like you would think that their struggles are, part of me hoped that they wouldn't have the same struggles that we had growing up. And unfortunately, you know, those struggles still exist. And in terms of representation, they certainly don't see representation. It's great to see your mum on telly, but they get really excited when they see other people that they can, like, when they see Ramesh. But can we just, let's just stop talking about him, because I'm the Asian on this podcast. We don't need to talk about him anymore, but like, he had his moment. That's it, done.
Yeah, one in, one out policy.
Yeah. You can't have two at once. Yeah. Come on.
You want progression, but you don't want to lose work, dear.
No, I mean, let's spread the Asians out, please. But yeah, my kids, you know, like, I'd love to think that, you know, my kids aren't going to have the same problems that I did. Certainly they'll be less than the ones that I had, but their problems will still be there. And there's something that we have this kind of mantra in our house. We say whenever we feel like we walk into a situation, which I do all the time, I walk into a situation where I'm the only person, whether it's Muslim, being brown or a woman, you know, like I walk in on a set and there's 50 people and I'm the only one there. And there's a problem, you know, that's a big problem. Something needs to change. And or whether it's a meeting, you name it, you know, I still to this day go into meetings feeling like, oh gosh, it's just me. And even now I struggle with that. And my kids, you know, they have the same situations going into certain settings that they go into. So that we have this thing that we say, and we say elbows out. Now, if you like physically stick your elbows out, like you're making space for yourself. But I'm not saying go and get stick your elbows out and barge everyone. But it's a thing, you know, whenever they feel like they don't fit in, I tell them elbows out, make space for you first. You've got to make space for you in order to make space for others. And as a grown up, I have to often tell myself elbows out. I literally whisper it in my own head, because if I don't make space for me, how will I make space for others? Like, how do I forge that path if I don't say that I belong here? This is my space. Like, I'm not asking to take anyone's space. I'm saying I need to create my own. And that's really important for my kids growing up to know that they have to create that space. Hasn't been created for them. They know that I don't have to tell them that. They know that space has not been created for them. So they have to create that space themselves. And that's going to take hard work and resilience and lots of knockbacks, but they have to. And I know that because I'm experiencing those things myself. So elbows out, make space for you so you can make space for others.
But Ramesh is taking up too much space.
Yeah.
Way too much.
Ramesh, elbows in, mate. Give us a chance.
Post-lockdown, I mean, who knows how much more space he's going to take up, right?
Exactly. Wow. I do think elbows out, though, has got to be a name of another autobiography talking about all this, Nadia. Elbows out is a great, a great phrase.
Yeah.
We always finish with the same question. And it's basically, is there something that your husband does that annoys you in his parenting that you can't really say to him about turning into a row, but you know deep down you're right and he's wrong? Is there something that niggles at you a little bit?
Is everything an answer? See, you know what it is? He's like, we're both quite like we both quite like discipline. So we just like, we like order in our house. Mm. We always go on about like, right, we like discipline and we like order in the house. And obviously that's kind of relaxed a little bit since being at home a lot. But I feel like I feel like we secretly made this plan that we were going to have order in our house and we were going to have these rules when we had children. Like I stuck to it and he didn't. And that's not okay. Fair. And he, somewhere in between all of that, decided that he was going to spend hundreds of pounds on Nerf guns. And now he's the better parent somehow. Like, I was like, hey.
He's the populist.
You know, I said, when we made that pact, when we said we were going to make children, that we were going to have order in this house, we said nothing about spending hundreds, and I swear to God, hundreds of pounds on Nerf guns with extra bullets,
Sounds like an absolute legend, this guy.
No, then you know what he says? He says, while I'm working, he'll say, oh, okay, well, you and the cat can stay in the conservatory. And he locks me into the conservatory with the cat litter tray. Can I just say, conservatories are hot and steaming turds are no fun in here. And he locks me in here and says, you stay here. And then he ransacks the entire house and he plays Nerf guns with the kids just before bedtime. Can you see why? He riles them up before bedtime. Not okay. He broke the pact.
Aren't you? You're jealous that he's the Nerf gun guy and they love it.
And I'm the one that does really good laundry and spends 3 hours dusting on a Sunday.
Nadia, it's genuinely been, I think it's my favourite interview we've done. It's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for doing it.
Yeah, and keep it up. What you're doing is invaluable. It's really impressive. Well done,
Nadia. Thank you.
What's the name and date of the book again? I know it, Nadia. I'm testing you.
Today I'm strong and it's 1st of April.
Correct. Right. Thank you so much, Nadia.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Honestly, it's like speaking to old friends, familiar voices. It's been lovely. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Do you know what? Like, I'd seen Nadia on the Bake Off and seen her on a few things, but I just didn't realise how incredible she is. It feels like whatever she chose to do, it'd be baking or presenting, or she's funny as well. She did comedy. She's got this energy in her being, I think, without sounding like too much like an absolute wanker. But she, but do you know what I mean? She just lightens up the room and like brings energy to whatever it is she's doing and passionate. And I think it's so inspiring. And she's really got her head screwed on, hasn't she? And it's nice to see someone that's sort of come from sort of quite a humble background of like studying and a bit of baking to now like hugely successful, but feeling like she deserves to be there.
Totally.
Rather than like, oh, I'm lucky to be here. I'm a girl done good. She's owned it and gone, do you know what? I'm good at what I do and I've got a voice that needs to be heard.
Like, I know she won Bake Off or whenever it was 6 or 7 years ago, but like when you read what she's done since then, it's just such a kind of lesson in someone who's been offered an opportunity and just done so much with it.
Yeah.
And not just done the same stuff, but pushed themselves to do all these different things. And I think it's just so important how honest she is about things. And I don't want to overstate it, but I think she's one of the most important cultural figures in the UK at the moment in many ways.
Fucking hell, mate.
Do you know what?
I know, I'm just saying that.
More than Romesh.
Oh, yeah, more than Romesh. He just fucking gets his
tits. No, but do you know what I mean? Like, in the what Nadia represents when she says she speaks for such a...
I know what you mean. It's so true. And I do think sometimes because, you know, like, everything in the media at the moment is so right-wing or so left-wing that someone's either Farage or someone's, like swampy being an activist. Do you know what I mean? So it's quite nice to sort of hear...
Kind of topical reference I'm looking for, Rob.
Anymore. I mean, Jones, he's a bit annoying, isn't he? But you know what I mean? People are either so annoyed, I think she's just in the middle. She's so normal and she's got such a good heart. And she's just trying to show that a female British Muslim that is funny, silly, can be successful, can earn money, doesn't have to do the traditional stay-at-home mum things and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's really inspiring on like a number of different reasons. So, yeah, no, good on her. And also, her husband's thighs sound absolutely incredible.
They sound as delicious as her cakes, Rob.
it was great. I enjoyed that. I'm a bit concerned though. Are we getting too serious? Is this still a funny podcast? I don't want to become like, you know, one of them comedians that think they're serious. Like, I just don't want to be running for London mayor in 5 years, but not for a laugh.
I think we all don't want you to be running for London Mayor in 5 years, Rob. No, absolutely brilliant from Nadia. Thank you. Her book is out 1st of April. It's called Today I'm Strong.
And paperback as well. That's always the best.
Oh, it's paperback. Out in paperback, 1st of April. Which, let's hardback, be honest.
So, it's so stiff-neck hardback, isn't it?
It's so stiff-neck, Rob.
Isn't it? It's just too hard to carry around. You've got to have it on the shelf. No thanks. I'll wait for paperback. £8 in Sainsbury's.
Oh, when you buy a hardback, you get a hardback book for Christmas. You buy a hardback book, like a novel. There's no way I'm taking that on the tube.
It's too heavy for your bag. No wonder they've all got stiff necks. It's a nightmare.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. And yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you next time.